97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
I've been kind of challenged on the X, formerly Twitter, today just with responses on Amendment 5. And the level of misunderstanding, which is one of the reasons it got smoked yesterday, is just kind of stunning. So, like, one guy, I just want to give you an example here, and Dwayne Patterson is going to jump on with us here in a minute. We're going to talk about Michigan and some of the other things. But somebody says to me, I would like to eliminate income tax, but not a 25% sales tax rate. First of all, that was, again, never. That was never going to happen. Not even close to that. There's not even a state in the country that has a sales tax rate of local and state combined that's in excess of 11.5%, 12%. Okay, so that's just ridiculous. So then someone says the entire problem is that the Pro 5 argument made no sense. Quote, we're not going to raise taxes on anything, but we're not going to cut the funds either. Plus, you'll be making more money because you won't pay income tax, and we're going to gain new jobs because they can pay you less now. Well, that's ridiculous because they were going to cut spending. There's little triggers that are in this thing that were very specific to what would happen. Again, it was ill-conceived, so in the end, it doesn't matter. It's been moot. But so this guy who's a retiree, and this is where I think people might even be more confused. He says, you would have a little more money on your paycheck. True. Taxes on sales and services would go up and would cost more than what most pay in income tax. I'm retired and I pay no state income tax. I would be voting just to raise sales taxes on myself, like many retired people. My response to BP Blue Eyes was, you didn't have any money in a 401k or an IRA? I guess he didn't save enough money for retirement, because that's not smart. If you did, you're paying Missouri income tax. Okay? I promise you. And a little more. Now, I do okay. I'm just going to tell you. But my household Missouri income tax is going to probably land at about $12,000 or $13,000 this year. All right? And there is no way you can convince me that any sales tax increase would exceed anywhere near that. It wouldn't exceed $3,000. It likely wouldn't exceed $2,000. So for those of you who are paying $3,000, $4,000. Look at your W-2. Look at your paycheck. Look how much you paid in income tax. Think about whether you'd like to write a check for that amount at the end of the year. Or do you think it'd be okay that if you get a haircut that you don't pay taxes on right now, that you pay 25% or 20, not 25%, 20 cents more, 25 cents more, right? That's where this was sold in a very poor way by Republicans, because they didn't explain that to people. And everyone had conjured up in their mind that, oh my God, taxes on everything are going up. Like the one realtor that I, you know, made a bet with, somebody posted the cost of a $300,000 house is going to be $43,000 more with sales tax. Stop it. That's just ridiculous. That's why I bet that woman $43,000 that would never happen.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Oh. Here's something I'm seeing on the feed too. I'm retired. How would that benefit me?
If you're retired, you are still likely paying Missouri income tax. If you're not, if you're just getting pensions and Social Security, well, then you would be paying more in sales taxes on some things. But most people are retired who are retired are still paying state income tax. So make sure before you make a comment like that, make sure you know what you're talking about. For those of you who are Missouri income tax free, well, then you would probably have to pay a little bit more in taxes. I don't know what to say, but for economic growth and moving the state forward, is that worth it? I guess not, right? I mean, it's not going away. Believe me, we're going to have continued conversations about this. Dwayne Patterson with HotAir.com, host of the Dwayne's World podcast. I'm genuinely curious, before we get into the national stuff, what your viewpoint would be from the left coast on Missouri choosing very forcefully to keep their income tax. Like, this thing failed so badly last night, Dwayne, like 3-1, almost 4-1.
Well, first of all, hello, Mark, hello, Sue, and hello to all you straight-up racists in the greater listenership that did not vote for Cory Booker.
I know, they are racist, you're right.
Straight-up racists, yes. Yeah, so listen.
Even though the other guy was black, too, but you're still racist.
Doesn't
if you, yeah, it doesn't matter. No, I know.
Because white Democrats voted for Wesley Bell, he's got proximity to whiteness.
Exactly.
We're using the language of Francesca Hong now.
Thank you.
So on the issue, I heard your setup to this. Here's what I think about this. The messaging on how you sell this matters immensely, obviously. And I don't see much of a difference in how this was sold or not sold very well compared to nationally how the Republicans need to sell all the growing indicators that are going on with the economy.
Well, I think you're right about that. Yeah.
And I think we're missing the opportunity to be able to not just say, you know, socialists and commies bad, which they are. You have to have a positive message. And manufacturing is going through the roof. People's take-home income is, on average, $3,000 more than it was last year. Inflation has come down. All sorts of things are happening good. It's not perfect yet because of the Iran war. But the economic indicators for the next year or two, if we don't muck it up by putting a bunch of crazy people in power, we're going to do really well. But we've got to do the messaging better, and we're just not doing it. And I think that was the problem with the income tax in Missouri. I was just looking real quick. You guys do somewhere in the order of 12.9, maybe 13, as much as economic impact of $21.4 billion of tourism every year. Do you not?
I'm going to have to accept those numbers. People that voted against this act like we don't get any tourism. I guess they forget about Kansas City, St. Louis, and Branson. Yeah, we get a lot of tourism.
$21 billion of tourism.
Right.
Now, if $21 billion had, what, 25, you know, or not 25%, what was the number going to be? 4% higher? 5% higher?
Maybe 5%. It would go from, it would depend, first of all, on the triggers, but it would go from whatever it is right now to nothing.
So how do you, so to your retired person that says, how does this affect me? Well, what it's doing is it's spreading the cost of police and fire and roads and everything else in the state. It is spreading that cost now to everybody that helps use it, which includes people visiting the state.
Well, yeah, exactly. The other problem with this is I think people are assuming that, well, this is what happened here at least, that everything on the planet was going to get taxed when that wasn't going to happen, even though the governor kind of made that clear. So the scare tactics work because in the back of people's minds, they really thought it was a tax increase. And that's what I'm hearing from people today on social media. But let's talk about our friend El Sayed. Okay, here he is in Michigan.
My hope is that our democracy will never be the same. So when Big Pharma and Big Tech, when DTE and Blue Cross come a knocking saying, you know what, this is our democracy and we're going to own it. From here on out, we can always point and say, no, this is the people's democracy, and we will always own it.
Now, I guess I don't even know how to properly pronounce his name. He tried to teach us that last night.
They think that you want to use my whole name against me. Mike, listen, man, if you can't say the name, it's Abdurrahman. Keep the name out your damn mouth.
Yeah. Dwayne, I'm going to say I can't say the name because I don't even know what he just said right there.
You know what I want you to do? Close your eyes, play that cut again, and tell me, listen to the cadence. Listen to the rhetoric and tell me who he's channeling. Tell me who he's trying to impersonate.
They think that you want to use my whole name against me. Mike, listen, man, if you can't say the name, it's Abdurrahman. Keep the name out your damn mouth.
Yeah. Well, to me, he sounds like Hassan Piker quite a bit.
Well, there's some of that. But
Mamdani, Hassan Piker.
In the lead up, right before that clip, if your guys can go back and cut it at some point, in the 30 seconds leading up to that, it's Barack Obama. It's the same rhetoric. It's the same cadence. He's trying to
channel.
Oh, that
I believe. Yeah.
He's trying to channel sounding like Barack Obama, like, you know, like New Hope.
Right.
Is what he's trying to sell.
So we talked about this a little bit earlier because, and I think you're right about that. And, you know, Obama had the Reverend Wright in his background, and the Reverend Wright was just awful. So people like me and you and Hugh Hewitt and Rush Limbaugh, we tried to highlight that, right? But the legacy media didn't want to go down that path. But he was able to distance himself from that. So along those lines, two things. I remember, I think a lot of us thought, man, a dude named Barack Hussein Obama is not going to win to be president of this country. Well, we were off by a lot on that. So my question would be a couple of fold here. Should we be careful here in to not underestimate Mr. El Sayed in Michigan? So that would be one question. And, you know, what do Republicans do to respond to this so they can get back on the proper messaging?
Both are reasonable questions. Number one, no, you never want to underestimate your opponent. That's stupid to do in politics is to underestimate. I think he is supremely beatable, and why I don't think he is going to be this year's Barack Obama and swamp everything is because Barack Obama got 94% of the black vote in in 2008 and similar numbers in 2012. If you look at where his strong points were and where his weak points were, Haley Stevens cleaned up in the black districts in Detroit.
No, this is important because
he's not selling to a lot of people outside of the college age class and the Dearborn Radicals. That's really where, and he underperformed everywhere.
Very much so.
The only place he ran up the score is in Ann Arbor and in Dearborn, right?
Yeah, and where those are the Arab Muslim strongholds, right? This is important for you to make this point. And I got to give credit to CNN because there was someone on CNN last night when I got home from the coverage, they were making this point as well, that he underperformed. Look, this race, if it was 9 points or 10 or 11 points, he beats Haley Stevens. Like the polls were predicting, well, that's a different game, right? Now you're looking at this as Mike Rogers might be in trouble. And again, I'm not underestimating, I'm not saying this thing is over, but because he underperformed in those areas, I think that gives Rogers a lot better, you know, starting point from the get-go. But again, this guy is going to be a chameleon. He's going to try to change his stripes and run away from this stuff. And you know as well as I do that the media is going to help him. They helped Mamdani. They're going to help him do this in Michigan.
I think the bloom is already coming off the rose. In his presser today when he did his victory lap, what did he say? He said, look, to the people out there that are worried about, you know, how I'm going to do with the Jewish community, I want you to know, I'm paraphrasing. He said, some of my best friends are Jews. He basically said, I want to break bread at Seder with Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you know much about the whole Judaic religion and what they do on Seder, but they don't break bread. It's unleavened. They have to tear it. He doesn't have the first concept of what he's talking about when it comes to that, and I don't think anybody believes him. If you can name me one Republican in Michigan that is going to see Mike Rogers as a nominee and say, well, that tears it, I'm going to go vote for El Sayed, that person does not exist. Do you think that there is a handful of people that specifically did not vote for El Sayed this time because they think he's a whack job and they wanted Haley Stevens instead because she's progressive, but at least she's not insanely stupid. And and now that Sayed is the nominee, do you think that every available Democrat is going to come home, or are some going to sit on their hands?
I think a lot of them are going to sit on their hands. But here's the other thing to not underestimate is the Trump derangement syndrome, because that's what they're counting on, I think. But yeah, you're going to have, and some of this, I think I heard this discussed last night. Look, Trump, maybe Joe Rogan played a big role in this. He got younger people motivated and interested. A lot of that was economic focused. Well, if you look at the polling now, he's lost a lot of the shine on that. And that's where these DSA candidates are really connecting with young people. Now, he's not a DSA guy, but he is just as radical and he's dangerous. But I don't see young people coming out for him the way that they did for Mamdani or some of these other candidates. So that's really maybe going to be the determining factor.
And let me add one last layer on that if you want to move on. But the one last layer is, why did Donald Trump win in Michigan in 2024? What was the key constituency group of the Democrats that he broke and took? It was the labor unions.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right.
He split the union vote. And Are the unions unhappy with Donald Trump now after the tariffs and after manufacturing boom and after a bunch of workers have all sorts of really good paying jobs?
No, they are not.
Things?
No, they are not.
No, they're not. Yeah. They still like Donald Trump an awful lot, don't they? Do you think that they want to say, yeah, but El Sayed is the guy that we want now? The unions aren't going to go for him.
No, they won. By the way, here's John Fetterman on all this.
He was really arrogant in that race. And now he have just found out that, less than a majority of Democrats want him.
What? Why is he the only guy saying things like this?
I mean, he has like a little man syndrome kind of energy. Yeah, well, I can't come together with someone if you are willing to embrace people that loves Hamas or that thinks America deserved 9/11. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, and that person he's talking about is Hassan Piker.
Take nuke for you, okay? You are all unbelievably Islamophobic pieces of okay? You literally called the dude a terrorist.
So that is Hassan Piker addressing moderate Democrats, like people who voted for Haley Stevens. So that's not exactly how you bring people over to your candidate, right? Insulting them, saying they're a bunch of idiots because they didn't vote for Syed.
That is not going to, and again, you said that El Sayed's going to have to now trip all over himself to moderate for the general election. Guys like Hassan Piker are not going to allow him to moderate, and I don't think he thinks he has to. The fun part about today that got lost in everything with El Sayed, did you see what happened in New York today with Comrade Mamdani?
I don't think I did today.
I bet this happened while you were on the air. He was supposed to be given a speech today out in, somewhere across Hell's Half Acre up in New York. And he takes the stage to deliver a speech. And they literally
booed him
off
the
stage.
Yes, I did see a quick clip of this during a break.
Booed him off the stage. On my radio blogger X account, I've got the video of him getting booed off the stage. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're his comms team, you're saying they're not booing. That's Hassan Piker's crowd out there, and they're just saying Jews, and my work here is finished.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that is kind of an interesting thing that happened, and this Michigan race.
I think we're at a tipping point now, and you're right. We still have to bore down, and we have to have a good message, and we have to have a reason to vote for us. All across the board, up and down the ticket. But that said, the country outside of college-age enclaves and bubbles around the country, this is not selling in Missouri. There's a reason Cori Bush didn't even get 30%.
No, she got blown out.
She got hammered.
Right. And a lot of us thought that was going to be closer. Really, we did. Dwayne Patterson, awesome to have you on. We're going to have a lot of fun here in the next few months talking about Michigan. You know, we kicked this off last week, and I haven't mentioned it enough, and I want to guide people into an amazing listener trip that I kicked off with my friend Mike Kenny from Define Destinations. Mike and I have known each other for, I guess, maybe about 15, 16 years. He used to work for a company in Wisconsin called Holiday Vacations, and when I was at WTMJ in Milwaukee, I took many trips with Holiday Vacations, and we did cruises, went to New York City a couple of times with listeners, went to Europe, went to Hawaii, did some of that here when I was on CamWex. Well, I kind of took a break from it because, not to sound too elitist, but I had been to much of Western Europe, been to Alaska a couple of times, was looking for something new. So Mike broke off from Holiday Vacations and he started his own company, Define Destinations. He lives outside of the Minneapolis area. And it's a smaller travel company, but what impressed me about Mike to begin with is we took a trip to Italy and went to Florence and Rome and Verona. By the way, if you ever go to Italy, Verona is awesome. And what stood out was Mike Kenny himself. He's a great tour guide, and he puts these trips together in a way that are just magical. And he makes it more fun because he's so good at what he does. We have local guides, you know, that we have as well. But May 25th through June 5th, we're going to Croatia. And this is going to be a 12-day trip through these historic cities, national parks. The waters of the Adriatic are just beautiful. We start with 3 nights on land, 2 nights in Zagreb, 1 night near the Plitvice Lakes National Park, which is beautiful. And you have these turquoise lakes and cascading waterfalls. I remember when Mike was in Croatia maybe 4 years ago, it was after the pandemic, he was posting some of the pictures from what I just described. They were breathtaking. So it was always at the top of my list. And I'll kind of walk you through the process. So a couple years ago, 3 years ago, I said, hey, Mike, let's go to Spain. We went to Spain, took listeners there. Last year, Greece was at the top of my list. Let's go to Greece. We went to Greece. This year, he actually tried to pitch me on Ireland. I really want to go to Ireland, but I kind of think I can do Ireland on my own, right? And I want to do it that way. And not that it would be bad to have listeners come along with me. It would be fun. But with this, this is a ship that we're going to take. It's a it's essentially like a yacht. And it's total 36 guests total. So that's 34 because Becky and I are two of those. Mike and probably a guest. So that... Audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the hour. Let me see what Fred has set up for tomorrow. I know we have the Reardon Roundtable set. Greg Keller and Ed Rohde will be here on Friday. We had a great visit earlier this afternoon. You can use the Odyssey Rewind function. Go back to the 3 o'clock hour. David Barklage, GOP political strategist, who was on with us a couple of times last night, broke down a lot of what happened with the ballot issues and the state legislature and the races. And then Josh Krausauer was on, a 97.1 Talk FM Talk political insider, the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh is awesome. I've known him for a long time. And he broke down the El Sayed race really, really well. We talked about Corey losing to Wesley as well. That was all in the 3 o'clock hour. We had the couple interesting races. Steve Ellman was on earlier. He was the winner in the St. Charles County executive race. I think most of us, the so-called experts, expected that to be a little closer, and it wasn't. Bill Igel probably has ended his political career. On the Democrat side, it was Jake Zimmerman, who won big over Brian Williams. A lot of people, and I said this earlier, people 3 months ago were saying, Brian Williams will be the next county executive. It was so definitive. And then he ran a terrible campaign, and somehow Jake Zimmerman pulled out a victory. Dennis Hancock will be the Republican candidate for St. Louis County Council in November. He used to be my councilman in the Fenton area. He was also the mayor of Fenton way back when. Dennis is with us this afternoon. How are you this afternoon? You didn't really have much to worry about last night, so that had to be a good feeling.
It was pretty much of a nail-biter, Mark. You know, my wife and I voted a week ago, and I felt pretty good about my chances after that.
This is always a question that I'm not sure I get honest answers from politicians, but I'll try it anyway. I mean, in your mind, did it matter who you square off with, Jake or Brian Williams? Because what some folks will say is, look, that, you know, facing Jake Zimmerman might be better than a young, real good looking African American in St. Louis County, which is leaning a little more to the left. So did it matter who you face?
It really didn't, Mark. I've been a mayor for 12 years. I've been on the county council now for four. I've got a record of achievement that I'm pretty proud of, and I think that my record would compare favorably to either of them.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all, but here's my whole thing with this. And you know I like you. I've known you for a long time. I think you'd be a great county executive. But I've also been very close to this process over the last 15 years. I was in the war room with Bill Corrigan when he almost won as a Republican. I was in the war room with Rick Stream when he almost won. And these were close races. It looked like a Republican could pop through in St. Louis County, but it hasn't been the pattern. So how do you think a Republican like you can win in St. Louis County, where the math kind of tells you differently when it comes to the makeup of Democrats versus Republicans?
No, and you're absolutely right. If you look at a generic Republican versus generic Democrat, the generic Republican loses every time because there just aren't enough of us. So what we have to do is appeal to the Democrats. And 2 years ago, when I started thinking about this, I mapped out a strategy that I thought was a winning strategy. First part was coalesce all the Republicans behind whoever the Republican candidate is. Now, avoid a primary at all cost, and we did that.
Yep, that's big. That's important. And by the way, for listeners, that is not to be underestimated, because you can really spend a lot of time, resources, money, where you can save that for the general, and that's the position you're in.
Right. And then, the next step was to have at least two and hopefully three Democrats in a primary where they would just beat the snot out of each other. And they did
happen.
That.
Right.
And so now there are 51% of the Democrats in St. Louis County who did not vote for Jake Zimmerman yesterday. And I've already started reaching out to the ones that I know and have heard back from several that they're going to support me in the general. And so if we can continue to build on that, it's not going to take a huge number. Sam Page won with 52% about 4 years ago.
So what are you going to make this race about? What do you want this race to be about?
I want this race to be about competence. I want it to be about people feeling safe in their homes and public safety. And I want it to just be about getting back to the business of government, fixing potholes, plowing the streets in the wintertime, picking up trash, those sorts of things that we seem to have lost sight of over the last couple of administrations.
You know, I think what I know about you, and this is one of the things that I felt maybe with Brian Williams, Dennis, just being honest, I thought Brian was someone who really did want to focus on the issues in the county and didn't want to do this whole nonsense like Sam Page does, where he likes to draw attention to himself, and Lisa Clancy does this on the council with the national issues. I think people in St. Louis County, they want, the county executive to run government efficiently. So, like you said, they can have the basic services. And I'm not, you know, sensing that anyone really wants that position to be someone who's taking a stand on Israel or any of these other issues. And you know that, and I think that's how you would run the job. So with Jake, that's where I see a window, because he, smart guy, right? He's been in elected office for a long time, but seems to be more leaning into the progressives and making those issues part of his campaign when they may not even apply to St. Louis County. Now, I bring that up because we have another amendment that people are going to vote on. That's Amendment 3, and it's another abortion issue. That is going to drive a lot of turnout for the Democrats. Doesn't that work to your disadvantage?
Well, it could, and but it also is going to bring out a lot of Republicans. And so I think that the people of St. Louis County are smart enough to separate that issue from their local elected officials. And if they can do that, and we can convince them to do that, then I think I think we have a real chance of doing this. You know, the thing that most politicians forget is you don't need 100% of the vote. You only need 50% plus one.
Well, and you're facing the guy who is responsible for assessing people on their property taxes, right? And their personal property tax. There's got to be a window there, because if there's anything that angers people, I mean, obviously we learned a pretty hard lesson last night on income taxes. But most of the responses that I see on Amendment 5, people say, wait, let's look at our property taxes. That's where things have gotten out of control.
Well, exactly. And you know, Jake is the guy that everybody gets a letter from every 2 years telling you how much more valuable your home is and how much more valuable your property is. And, you know, I'm the guy that puts the senior tax freeze in place to help our seniors stay in their homes. That's 80,000 homes that are now probably have a good thought about me.
What would you say, Dennis, you know, about the fiscal situation of St. Louis County, because there's some challenges, right? And, you know, I don't know what the answers are. Sam Page has some proposals, and certainly the lefty members of the council. But what would you say about the future of the fiscal situation and how you would address that?
You know, Mark, if you remember back in 2009 when Chrysler shut down, that represented about 15% of the revenue for the city of Fenton. We came through that without raising taxes. We looked at everything we were spending money on, and I mean, these were weeks of meetings going through every line in the budget, and what were we spending money on, and what did we have to spend money on, and what was nice to have. And we were able to separate the nice to haves from the have to haves. And by doing that, we solved our problem without raising taxes and without implementing any new taxes. So it can be done. And I think that that's one of the things that probably has been frustrating for me on the council, is we haven't gone far enough with that. You know, we've nibbled around the edges at it, but we haven't really taken a deep dive into it. And I think now is the time to take that deep dive.
Dennis, can you explain, you know, I'll be honest, maybe I should have done more on this, but there was something that was on the ballot for St. Louis County called Prop U, right, which would have allowed the county and, you know, municipalities to get proceeds from online purchases and out-of-state purchases, and the estimate was $70 million anyway. That failed yesterday, didn't it?
Right.
Okay.
It did.
So what was your position on that? And now the story today is, from Sam Page, is that we got to look at a property tax increase. That's what he is saying today in the aftermath of Prop U going downtown, or down rather. So what would you say to that?
Well, my position on Prop U, on Proposition U, was I'm the only person on the council that voted against putting it on the ballot, just because of the reasons I just said. You know, I don't think we've gone far enough into looking at what are we spending money on and what should we be spending money on. You know, over the last several years, we've gotten first there were the CARES Act money, and then there's the ARPA funds. And, you know, where did that money all go? And I think a lot of it probably went to new programs that, you know, you took one-time money and created new programs, and now we're paying those bills every year, even though we don't have those extra funds to pay for them. So that's, I think, you know, things that like that, that we need to really be taking a deep dive on.
Here's what Sam Page says today, or a spokesperson says, a $111 increase on the average homeowner would generate $46 million and would put the county in a position to avoid most of the worst possible budget cut outcomes. So they're going to go for property tax increase.
Yeah. And that's where I think we as council have to take a stand and say, no, we're not going to go down that road. Uh, let's let's get our fiscal house in order, and then we can, you know, let's do everything we can, and then let's try to convince the voters that we are, you know, we've done everything we can. And I think that's a big part of why Prop U failed, is because I think people looked at it and go, well, what are you doing to rein in cost? And they didn't really see much, and there hasn't been any, there wasn't any organized campaign, which I thought was interesting. One of the things that Dr. Page talked about today was having an organized campaign paid for by the county. And I guess nobody reminded him that that's why he's under indictment.
Here's another bit of confusion. This gets confusing between the city and the county. But have we just kind of pissed away the Rams money, or what's the status of all that with the county?
No, we still have about $130 million of the Rams settlement in an account. We've spent $40 million on subdivision streets in the county, and we've plugged some gaps here and there with the rest of it. We spent $500,000 on ballot issue last year for Proposition B, mm-hmm. and to get that on the ballot, and then we still have it. And you know, in my view is, why do we need to spend it? Why don't we just hold on to it? You save it for a rainy day fund, and if we find ourselves in a real situation where a tornado comes through and rips out half of the county, maybe we can use it for that.
Well, especially in this stock market, be a good idea to keep it, you know, safe for a little while. Dennis, good luck. I know it's going to be an interesting campaign. Congratulations on your victory last night, I must say. And yep. We'll see where this takes us here in the next few months. I appreciate coming on this afternoon.
Hey, thanks. Anytime, Mark.
All right, take care. Audio cut. All right, we're down to the final moments of the post-election show, and I really did have fun last night. My thanks again to Senator Lamping, who joined me, David Barklage, Steve Ellman was on last night, Mike Elam, who am I forgetting, Tim Fitch. We had a lot of contributions during election night coverage, and thanks to all the candidates who were on with us this afternoon. I thought I was going to have Mayor Spencer on this week, Sue. She was confirmed.
Did she
for
really?
Friday.
Yeah, oh,
no,
I didn't know
serious.
That.
She was confirmed, but they changed that around, so I do want to talk to her. We got to do this here before we get out of here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, I've given this Michigan El Sayed dude way too much attention, so I'm going to veer from that in audio cut of the day. I'm going to get away from Amendment 5 and all this stuff in Missouri. I'm going to go to Clay Travis from OutKick, who's offering the WNBA an amazing deal.
If they are going to allow men to play, I think we should have an actual game. Not NBA players against WNBA players, high school boys. Let me pick a team. I will put it on pay-per-view. We'll donate all the profits to Tunnel the Towers for Wounded Warriors. If the high school boys win, I will give them $10 million. If the WNBA team wins, I will give them $10 million.
That's pretty good.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, here's Riley Gaines talking about that offer.
If the WNBA's goal is to become the most inclusive league in the history of ever and to hit a pretty big payday, then they just got the opportunity of a lifetime, thanks to Clay Travis. Introducing the Nashville Balls, the most inclusive team in all of WNBA history. Clay Travis vows to make it a 100% trans team, meaning all players would be men identifying as women. He tweeted this: I'm prepared to buy a WNBA expansion franchise and locate them in Nashville. I pledge to have a 100% trans team, all men who identify as women. I will also employ a 100% trans coaching staff, most inclusive team in history. But Clay's not just saying it. He's putting his money where his mouth is. He offered the WNBA $10 million for a head-to-head basketball game between the defending WNBA champions, the Las Vegas Aces, and a boys' high school state title team of his choice. If the boys win, he'll give them $10 million to distribute as they see fit to their team members. Game on pay-per-view with all profits donated to Tunnel to Towers to provide mortgage-free homes to families of deceased soldiers, police, and first responders. If the Aces were to beat the boys' team, he would give the WNBA $10 million. And I don't think he's kidding, because he just gave Vanderbilt Law School $10 million. So the WNBA gets to own the title of most inclusive league. They get to showcase their women's ability, and the proceeds go to a good cause. We've heard from virtually every WNBA coach at this point,
what's
and
the
league itself, that inclusivity is in fact the goal. So what say you, WNBA? Just know if you decline the offer, that makes you bigoted transphobes by your own standard. I'm ready to buy my Nashville Balls merch.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it would
be so great.
So that's
kind of funny, and it'll never happen.
Nope.
But look, there's precedent for this. We've had high school soccer team boys beat the women's national team. So there's precedence. Clay knows what he's doing. But this is maybe, you know, that's all fun and games and it'll never happen. But this is really disappointing. This is the coach of the Indiana Fever. That's Caitlin Clark and Sophie Cunningham's coach. Listen to how she answers some of these questions.
What's your stance? What is your stance on men or athletes who test as biological male participating in women's sports? What's your personal stance?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would say that I'm educated enough from a scientific standpoint. I don't ever believe that exclusion is an answer. I just don't.
Okay, both those things there are just so stupid. Exclusion, yeah, because you're a women's sport. So what you're doing is you're excluding men. So if you don't think exclusion should be an option, then let's open up the WNBA to all men and have them compete against the women and see how the women do. So that's just such a cowardly answer from her.
I do think, you know, when we think about various levels of sport, various governing bodies of sport and things that go into that, like I said, I'm not educated enough at the different levels. I know growing up, I played with the boys all the time.
That's not the point. That's Stephanie White.
Fine, do it now.
Right. She's an embarrassment because she's cowardly. If you, as the head coach of a league that has head coaches wearing protect trans kids and preventing people from simply holding signs that support Sophie Cunningham, if you're not educated on this issue as the head of the Indiana Fever, well, you should be. Okay, you should be supporting your teammates, by the way. And some, you know, I know that Clay Travis has called Caitlin Clark a coward as well. And I do think there's something to that. I get that they want to focus on basketball. Even Sophie today was talking about basketball. But have a little bit of courage to support sanity.
Get more at 971talk.com.